For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
That's a gay ass podcast.
What? That's a gay ass podcast.
A what?
A really, really, really gay podcast that we call That's a Gay Ass Podcast.
That's a gay ass name for a gay ass podcast.
Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? It is me, Eric Williams, and this week we've got the hunky Broadway baby, John Riddle, on the podcast, who you maybe saw in the original Broadway cast of Frozen. You might have seen them in the final cast of The Phantom of the Opera, along with a million other shows, including a bunch of shows at the St. Louis Muni. That's right, the theater in my hometown, producer Nathaniel's hometown, which is an 11,000-seat outdoor theater that, for some reason, a lot of Broadway stars go to the humidity of Missouri over the summer to do shows. I ask him why people do that in this episode. But before we get into it, just to take a moment to acknowledge what's been going on in L.A., sending all of my love to all the people who are losing their homes, who are dealing with unimaginable tragedy. I'm very grateful that our place is okay. We did leave L.A. because of the air quality, but it's just unimaginable. And I'm so grateful to everybody who has checked in and just sending love and, you know, it's dark. It's very dark, but I'm, again, grateful that we are here, we are safe, and we're sending love to the people who are dealing with unimaginable loss. Now, before we also get into this episode, I just want to tell you that there is an incredible bonus episode on the Slaytreon with Manuel Betancourt, who is, I think, our first guest on the Slaytreon who is in a throuple, and we talk about what happened the first time he and his boyfriends went to an orgy together. So go to the Patreon at patreon.com/gayasspodcast for that. And for this episode with John Riddle, we talk about the beautiful relationship that gay boys have with their grandmothers. We talk about the fucked up shit that John was told at his musical theater program at CCM. And we also talk about how he and his boyfriend Matt Wilkes met, which might include an Instagram DM. Please enjoy this episode. Please stay safe. And this is John Riddle.
John Riddle, you might not know this, but producer Nathaniel and my gay ass self both hail from the town of St. Louis, Missouri. And John Riddle has done many a show at St. Louis's gigantic outdoor theater, the St. Louis Muni. John,
First of all,
did you know about the Muni until you auditioned for it? Or like what? Why would a John Riddle say, I'm going to go to the humidity of St. Louis?
It was the, I went to the Cincinnati College Conservatory of Music.
Oh.
And some people know it as CCM. And I didn't know anything about anything. I was going to be an architect when I was in high school. And I decided to be a crazy person and be an actor. And so when I went to college, everybody went, we would drive out to St. Louis and go audition for the Muni. And I was 19 years old. It was my freshman year of college, and they used to line you up in a high school auditorium, and you would line up on the stage and you would sing the last like 8 bars of On the Street Where You Live. And they would go, okay, you, and you.
John, you don't have to tell us. You're talking with two former Muni kids right here.
Oh, fuck. Then what am I even saying? I don't have
Legacy
to explain
baby.
This to you.
Legacy baby. You went through puberty on the Muni stage.
My same.
Wait, so, we probably like, were in the same room at one point singing On the Street Where You Live. And
nightmares,
I was
probably
in real time.
Are we the same age?
We are the same
age. 2009 graduation.
High school?
Yeah, high school.
Me too. Were we ever in a show together?
Oh, God.
No, because you wouldn't have been a Muni kid.
No, we probably missed the boat on that, but Nathaniel and I did many shows together. That's how we met. We did shows together at the Muni when we were in fully like middle/high school. And there were always the hot guys from CCM and UMich and Carnegie Mellon who would come to St. Louis, and my closeted ass would meet them after the shows. They remember that we do a tailgating and I would get my pictures with
John. Were you here for Midnights and like Sweat Tech? Were you still here for that?
Oh, yeah. And then we would go to that diner afterwards.
Yeah, Courtesy Diner.
It's very different now. It's very, like, fancy.
Oh, yeah,
now.
They don't do Midnights. They don't do it. They basically usher everybody in on Pearl Thrones. It's rock.
I remember.
Oh, baby. I remember South Pacific 2300. Yeah. I had to sit on the showboat.
I did showboat there once. Oh, my God. So.
All right, Eric, so you can get your intro. I'm a vanish here. Have a fun one, kids. Let me know if you need anything.
Thank you, Nathaniel. I'm just truly brought back to the summers of St. Louis. I mean, John, the fact that you and I can both bond over the fact that we would sweat on the stages of St. Louis. I mean, although to be fair, you were kind of coming from like a professional actor. I was still doing this as a high school student, one day dreaming of being paid. However, you need to tell me the truth, because as someone who fantasized about the Equity Ensemble and the principals of the Muni, were you all fucking each other during these summers, especially when you were in college doing the St. Louis Muni?
Listen, it was a different time back then. So like,
you were
I feel
fucking
like
the director.
If it was now, we would all be fucking, absolutely. But I don't know, like, I feel like I was a little more like prudish than I am now. So I suppose, but yeah, there was plenty of that. Like, there was lots of parties late at night, smoking a lot of weed, like drinking underage. I turned 21 in St. Louis. I had my 21st birthday there. I forget. I was doing some show there. And there was this little bar. I think it's called Rosie's Tavern. It's still there because I went there last summer. And it was like this hole in the wall place. And I drank 9,000 gin and tonics that summer.
Sure.
And since then, have not had a gin and tonic because I drank too many that summer.
I drank a bunch of Bush beer and then had the spins, and I have not had a glass of beer since I was 17.
I wish I could stop drinking. I love beer so much. I was just saying this to my boyfriend yesterday. I want a beer every single day. I'm doing my first ever dry January. I wish I could say I felt different. I don't.
I think you're going to feel better maybe at week 3.5 of your dry January. And as long as you can lean on the weed, that's all we can sort of hope for.
But it's just like the coolest place. And I love St. Louis. I'm from Ohio, and I'm not like rushing to move back to Ohio, but if I had to, I think that I would live. St. Louis is in my top five. If
really?
I had to live somewhere
this
else
is,
besides
this is
New York,
very
I
interesting.
Could do it. I could do it.
I know. The thing is, you and I both could do it. The question, I think, first of all, quality of life, I'm sure, like, as a human being is good because, like, you know, you're paying $2 for your home and whatever. I just think, my trauma from being a gay person in Missouri, going to a school that, like hated gay people, and just like the thing is I'm saying this because I know now there are tons of queer people in the Midwest and in St. Louis, and like obviously like my literal gorgeous gay ass producer Nathaniel lives in St. Louis. However, I still like part of me like feels like if I go back there, I'll go back into the like insecure high schooler that I was. But what would it take for you? What would it take for you to have to decide to move back? Is it like you want to have 12 children?
Let's be clear. I'm not moving back to St. Louis. St. Louis, I love you so much. I'm not moving there.
Okay.
And I know what you mean, because like when we're at the, you know, the Chase Park Plaza Hotel, it's like this fabulous hotel that where you stay when you work there. And I'm always like, when I'm packing this summer, when I was packing, I was like, do I pack a Speedo? Because like, I don't know, wearing a Speedo at feel I never wore a Speedo at the Chase Park Plaza.
But see, that's like you tampering down the gay slut that's inside because of where you are. I don't want to tamper my slut.
I don't want to tamper my slut. I'm going to wear my Speedo at the Chase Park Plaza. I really should. I should wear it. I should represent.
Do you like when you let your slut flag fly, where is the place you like to fly at the highest? Are we talking that you like to go to a fire eye? Are you going just to show your thong string at $3 bill in New York? Are you going to Puerto Vallarta, or are you just in your own goddamn living room?
I am. It's kind of like a mixed bag. I used to really frequent Fire Island, but in the last couple of years, I haven't really been out there a whole lot. I don't know. I've found myself in Provincetown. I know another, like, just add it to the list, but the last couple of years, and I just love it there. It's the thing that I like is that it's not a bunch of New Yorkers. It's like, it's not all the same people that I would see if I, you know, put a thong on and went to $3 bill. It's like all the Boston gays and people from all over the place. And it's just different. I really love it there. And I've like found this little community there of people that.
No, I it's embarrassing for me to say that I've never been to Provincetown, but I'm actually trying to go this summer. So I'll see you there. But I want to get into obviously the famous podcast. I'm going to go. And I want to get into the famous podcast question with you. I just have so many questions about your upbringing as a fellow Midwesterner, as a fellow theater queen. So I'm going to first ask you the podcast question, which is John Riddle, whose fault is it that you're gay? Who do we blame, babe?
I was not born gay. My grandmother turned me gay.
What did we call your grandma? What was her grandma name?
She was just grandma to me, but to everybody else, she was Big Sue. Her name was Sue Backus. I'm gonna say it. She was a legend. But she really was. I feel like she just took me like this when I was a really young kid, and she was like, come on, we're gonna go do a bunch of gay stuff. And like, I would go shopping, she would take me to the mall, she would call the house back when we had landlines, and she'd be like, come on, we're going to the mall, I need to go get a new bra from May Company. And I would like go bra shopping with my grandmother.
What size did she wear?
I come from a German family of like large people. I'm 6'2". My mom is 5'11". Like, we're like big German people who like to drink beer. And I would like, flowers were a big thing. We went to the nursery a lot. We would like go to Pier 1 and pick out throw pillows and like chenille throws for her living room. For her, she was so chic too. She called her couch a Davenport. I don't know if you've ever heard that term before, but she was like, get your feet off the Davenport.
Not since 62 have I heard Davenport.
Wow. Exactly. Yeah. So I don't know. She was very chic. She loved throwing parties. She was an incredible host. She had incredible style, which I'm trying to like, I don't know. Try to have good style.
You're really making me feel like a beautiful nostalgia for a young gay person and an older woman. And what is so magical about our relationship with the older women who talk to us like we were adults is that we were seen for our value. And I'm also like feeling a little emotional because I myself never had a grandma, but because both of my grandmothers died before I was born, but my husband's had all of his grandparents until recently, and his grandmother, who we call Gam, she passed away last year, and she to me was a little bit of Big Sue, I would say. Just like had that like loves jewelry and loves you know to host and loved her antique goods. And I hearing about your grandma makes me think about maybe the ones I would have had if mine were alive, but also like how lucky I am to have met Matt's grandmothers. And I just what's your favorite life adage that Big Sue passed along to you? Do you see the world differently because of Big Sue's presence in your life?
Oh my, absolutely. I think about her every single day. The funny thing about her was that she wasn't funny. Like, she did not have a funny bone in her body, which is very interesting. She was very serious and very like, I hope I didn't take on too much of that, but I don't know. It was this weird thing where we just always sort of got each other, and she got dementia towards the end of her life, and it's funny because she knew I was gay, but we never talked about it. It was a different time. It was the 90s. We were in Ohio. And even like even when I was in college, she like I said, she had dementia, and she would still say, "So who are you seeing? Are you seeing any girls?" Like, "No, grandma." Cause it just didn't feel like worth, I don't know. It felt like she could barely remember couldn't remember what she had for breakfast that day. Sure. So it was like, I don't know. It just felt like, I don't know. Should we go there? Maybe I should have. I don't know. Who knows?
Well, no, it sounds like you felt like she knew who you were at your essence without you having to say you suck dick, without you having to say that you are not going to bring any girls.
We were arranging like flowers on her dining room table for her bridge club. And like, I was helping her pick out linen napkins. Like, I wasn't out playing baseball or something. I did play sports, but like, do you know what I'm saying? She knew.
Of course.
Well, I sang with this orchestra because she also used to take, she basically like clothed me as a child because we just went shopping all the time. And she, I remember I sang with this orchestra when I was 13 years old in downtown Cleveland. And I don't know why, but I had this vision of, I wanted to wear all black and I wanted to wear a turtleneck sweater, and I don't know why, but I had like I knew what fit I wanted. And she took me to, I don't know, Dillard's or Kaufman's, whatever it was at the time, and bought, I remember shopping in the women's section for this like fitted merino wool black turtleneck sweater. And I was like, I look so sickening. I'm an artist. I'm like singing with this orchestra. I don't know. So I don't know. She knew.
She saw that you had this gift of the vocalization, but also she, I think, sort of was like, you know how like trans people get gender affirming surgery? She gave you gay affirming motherhood. And she
100%.
She affirmed who you were at your core without having to have a single conversation about what you were, which is of course a flaming homosexual. I love your grandma so much, and I do, since you know you obviously have such love for her. Let's take a quick moment to give a shout out to grandma and have a moment of gay bliss and love towards grandma. Girl, thank you for your service.
Girl, thank you for everything. Maybe she's hanging out with Gam. Do you think she's hanging out with Gam?
Oh my god, yeah.
Wouldn't that be sweet?
You know what?
Yeah.
Thank you for bringing up Gam. So let's give another shout out to Gam, to Grandma
shout out
and
to Gam.
We love you, girls, and thank you for being there for us. And thank you to all of the grandmothers and the queens and the character actresses and the mothers of the gay and straight people alike who are listening to this pod. The ones that were the real ones who saw us and let us go to Pier 1 to check out with the flowers we wanted, that let us grab the sickening full black turtleneck outfits, the ones that let us put on their jewelry, let us wear their heels. Thank you, grandmothers. Thank you.
One of my aunts, my mom's younger sister, is also a lesbian, and she has been with her partner. We call her Uncle Sue. She's been with Uncle Sue.
Are you a lesbian? You said also a lesbian.
I'm not. Oh, so, yeah. Well, I guess I sort of am. I own a pair of blunt stones, and I wish I drove a Volvo. So I guess I sort of am a lesbian. But they got together in the year I was born, 1989, and my Uncle Sue tells the story about how they went to some dinner party somewhere, and she introduced her as her daughter-in-law. And this is like in 1991 in Cleveland, Ohio. And she remember, like, Uncle Sue, she's a big crier, and she like she'll cry telling the story because I don't know, my grandma just she just knew. She just like I don't, and she just loved all of us so deeply that it didn't, I don't know, it didn't matter to her. And she was ready to, if somebody was going to fight her, she was going to fight them.
Wow. I mean, yeah, I've seen in one of your interviews that you talk about having a gay aunt and how seeing your family embrace her was a huge messaging for you. But also you had this really beautiful quote that in one of your interviews you said, you remember driving near Oberlin College and you said to your grandma, why is that man wearing a tie-dye floor-length skirt? And your grandma said, you can wear whatever you want and some people express themselves differently, which, I mean, it puts a really beautiful pin in the whole headline of your grandma fucking slayed. And
yeah, it's she
so
really
important
slayed.
To have people like that. I mean, I just, whenever I hear people, especially queer people who grew up with that, that's like the biggest sign of feeling safe is to see how they treat other people who are different. And I think that it's, do you think it's a part of the reason why you felt so supported in like going into theater so full tilt? I mean, if you're singing with an orchestra at a very young age, you're going to CCM, which is, you know, for anybody who doesn't know that's listening, it's like very intense conservatory for musical theater. Did you ever get pushback for saying, Mom, Dad, I'm gay and I'm going into musical theater?
Thankfully, neither. I'm so, so lucky. Like, my whole entire family is so supportive and they always have been. I actually asked my mom a couple years ago, I said, I think it's ridiculous that we as 16-year-olds are like, okay, I'm going to do this with the rest of my life. Of course, you know, lots of things happen, but I said, I asked her that question. I said, why didn't you say no when I was, you know, however old, I think I was 16 or 17. Cause I, like I said, I was going to be an architect and then I got crazy and I was like, no, I'm going to try this. And my mom and my dad both, they never questioned it. And I've asked them both this question. They said, we knew you'd be okay. So we just didn't worry about it. And so we let you go. And
you
I literally did it all on my own. This is like, I really did get lucky and I continue to be lucky and I've been lucky my whole life. But this was like before the internet was kind of not just coming out, but like it wasn't what it is now. This is 2006 or seven. And like I did all the research on my own about where to go to school. I drove myself to my auditions. For college, like my parents, I did all my own applications and all that stuff. I don't know how I did it. I was way more brave back then, but yeah, they supported me and I don't know why, because if I were them, I'd be like, you're crazy, go be an architect.
Well, they also, it sounds like they empowered you to be like, yeah, you can do it, but also go live your bliss. And then you did. I mean, I don't know if you're gonna feel shooketh when I tell you that I saw The Visit, your Broadway debut in the year of our Lord 2015. My voice teacher at the time,
like
Matt
people.
Deming, was in this show with you.
Yeah.
And
hi, Matt Deming.
Hey, Matt Deming. Shout out, still do your vocal warm up. But I just think that it's so impressive. Like, for anybody listening who doesn't know, John Riddle has done The Visit on Broadway, which was like a huge, even though sure, it didn't run for a super long time, it was a big deal because of it was Candor and Ebb, right?
Yeah. It was their last show that they ever wrote together.
Then you have also done, of course, Phantom of the Opera, the closing cast. You played a role. You did Frozen, of course, original Broadway cast playing Hans. I just saw the stage production for the first time and was just gagged by, isn't it, sorry to get into the dramaturgy of Frozen, but isn't it Anna's show? Elsa's on stage for 4 minutes.
It is Anna's show, 100%. But although, I've only seen the movie a couple times. Isn't it kind of her movie too?
Maybe. I felt like Elsa had maybe more to do in the movie, but there are some niches of the internet of theater queens who are obsessed with so many shows that you have done. Of course, Titanic. Of course, when you did Chess at the Muni, Legally Blonde, you did at the Muni. But when you did Frozen, you did Frozen with Timothy Hughes, who played the tall man in Natasha Pierre, who I think a lot of us find to be just kind of like a tall tree of a man that you would like to climb. Do you have a political response about me saying that that guy's hot?
No, he's a really good friend of mine, and he's an objectively hot guy, and everybody should know that.
And I think they do.
And he's also a really nice guy too, which that is like that
annoying.
I always think that that is worth something. Yeah.
It is worth something. So when you look at your Broadway past, I always love audition stories. Do you have either a story about where you either found out you had booked a big show, like maybe Frozen, or maybe like you had 15 callbacks? Did anything stand out about like a crazy audition story?
Well, I think that The Visit was maybe the most crazy because what had happened was I was in Chicago and my ex-boyfriend, hi Curtis, worked in the fashion world, and he asked me to come in and do this photo shoot. And it's a long story why I was in Chicago, but I was in Chicago and I ran to this photo shoot. I looked crazy and I did this photo shoot for him. And then somehow it got posted online, and then my agent at the time shared an office with James Caleri, who was casting The Visit, and they were looking for somebody that looked like a young Roger Reese. And my agent, whatever the situation was, their desks were like across from each other, and he was like, oh, well, look at this photo from my client that he just posted. And he was like, whoa, he looks that could work. So they brought me in on Valentine's Day of, I think this is, I forget what year it was, 2000 something. I was 25 years old. And I went in and I said, I'm going to sing Lonely House, because it felt like kind of like appropriate for what the show was from what I knew. And the music director, David Loud, who he's a Broadway legend. He goes, John, that's a really hard song. Are you sure you want to sing that? And I was like, yeah. And so I sang it and he was like, okay, good. And so I forget how it happened, but then they said, we need you to come back tomorrow. And I went in, I did a dance call and I sang for John Doyle and like did some other stuff. I can't remember. And then I was going to do this concert, this like crazy weird, I was doing some like concert or something. And I was literally like did the audition and then went to some other room at Ripley Greer to rehearse this concert. And my agent called me when I was in that rehearsal. It was like an hour later. And he was like, you're going to be on Broadway. And that's how I found out that I got that show. And it was like the whole thing happened in like 48 hours. Like getting the appointment for the audition was like, I don't know, it was like the day before Valentine's Day or something. So that whole process was like 3 days. And then we started rehearsal the next week. So it was like crazy.
God. It shows how fast things can change. I mean, you can be just a gay guy with a boyfriend who's taking photos of you. Were you shirtless in the photo shoot, John?
No, I wasn't. I was. Damn. It was for like some suit company or something. It's a good picture. I looked good. It's probably the best photo I've ever taken. And
will you send it
got
to me?
It got me a Broadway show. I will. But then Frozen was like, it was like 9 months of auditions, because we did the workshop and then they were like, we're gonna see more people. And it was truly, I think it was like another 9 months before. And I went back in, I said, I'll do whatever, I'll come in as many times as you want. I want to get the job. And so I kept going back in and I ended up getting it, because I did the workshop and then they had more auditions after that.
I don't need to hear names, but do you know people that you were up against?
Yeah, there's lots of stories. There's lots of good stories there, but I think I have to wait like maybe another 20 years or something before, maybe another 40 before I publish those.
Until we find out, like, I'm trying to think of the gaggiest person who'd be like going in for Elsa.
Honestly, though, Casey Levy, I like,
there's no other. There's no other. She is the one. I think that it's important for us to note that you have been on Broadway and done all of these shows professionally, like very much playing a straight character. I mean, you like have given leading man many times. Do you think that you ever felt a pressure to like butch it up, or were you always just like in enough therapy to just like be your authentic self? And that when I was doing musical theater, some people said to me unintentionally homophobically, well, Eric, at least, you know, you can play straight, which was debatable. But like that was their marker of me being a successful person, was can I believably play a straight person? Was that ever a role in your upbringing or the things you were told in theater school or otherwise?
Every day. And it still is to this day. Oh, it's still, I think that it's unfortunately still very homophobic.
Yeah.
When I went to school, it's twofold, because when I went to school, I literally knew nothing. I'm not kidding. Like I took piano lessons when I was a kid, and I took some singing lessons, and but I truly kind of knew nothing. And I just sort of had like I copied like Robert Preston and Gavin Creel and some other guys that I thought, and Dick Van Dyke. So I was kind of just like, everything that I did was sort of this like amalgamation of those guys. And it was like, I don't know. That's all to say, when I went to school, they were like, stop doing all of that and go lift weights and be a leading man, which, you know, the world was different then, and they were just trying to set me up to work. And I'm thankful for that, because I mean, I've had some incredible, like you said, I've gotten to play leading men on Broadway. But I don't know, it's called acting. Like, you can do both. You can be a gay man and kiss a woman on stage convincingly, I think. I also like, I don't know, I'm 6'2" and I look a certain way, but yeah, all the time. I remember there was a certain show that is going to go unnamed that the last time I went in for it, they told my agent, tell John to butch it up before he walks in the room. Now, you can't say that anymore, but I don't know. So yeah, that is a hard thing. It's really hard to then walk into the room, because you're like, hey guys, how are you? Or I don't know. I can't do that. I can't walk into a room and be like, hey guys, how are you? I can only like, just, I am the way that I am, and I talk the way that I do, and I look the way that I do. So I don't know. And if I'm right for it, I'm right for it. But
I think that's the winning mindset, is I am the way that I am. And I'm also a goddamn mother trucking actor who knows how to perform a role. If that person's in love with a fucking woman, then I'm going to perform that person. It's like, I think that what's so fucked up about it is that they're saying butch it up, as in John Riddle as a human being, you better butch up who you are as you walk in, versus just like, do audition well, like do the material well. But we internalize that as like, hey, make sure you go against your natural instincts. Thanks, babe. Have fun in there. It's like, oh, well, now I feel awful about who I am naturally.
Show us you. Yeah. I don't know. It's like, I think that I've sort of, in my career, I've sort of said, fuck that. And I just, I don't know, like for example, when I was doing Frozen, it was while there was so much shit happening in our country that was, you know, it still is, but, you know, the guy who's about to be our president, it was his first go around, and there was this sort of feeling in the theater community of like, we have to resist. And, you know, and I was playing a straight man on Broadway, but then, I was also like, Disney was really cool because I was like they had a gay pride celebration thing, and I spoke at that. And like, I don't know, we used to have a pride parade in the theater, and everyone dressed up and we wore skirts, and like, I don't know. I just think that, I don't know. I've just sort of always said, I've been dressing up as, you know, the Wicked Witch of the West since I was 3 years old. And like, I'm not gonna, I still do. I don't know. I just sort of think, fuck it. And if I'm too gay to play that, I don't know. There's straight guys who you could say they're, I don't. Do you know what I'm saying?
You can, like, say. I'll say their goddamn name. I'm going to say, when I found out that Christian Borle was straight, I was like, go off, sis. You better.
Yeah,
like,
it's, I know. It's, he better. Exactly. He better. Like,
and it's like, be who the fuck you are. And also, musical theater is just a very gay art form. And who are we to say, go butch it up as you're singing a literal song about being in love or whatever the fuck. It's like, this is all gay, babe.
It's all gay.
But I really admire that you just like try to lean into who you are. And if you get it, you get it. And if you don't, you don't. But let's get into your actual gay life as John Riddle. You are currently in a gay relationship. Is that true?
I am. It's true. I am. It's been almost 4 years, which is wild.
Four more years, John Mazeltov. Now, your boyfriend, thanks, Matt, you two are a stunning, stunning couple, but I always love to get the BTS. Can you tell us how you met? Is there any meet cute that we need to know about?
Oh, yeah. This is so embarrassing for Matt. He, speaking of Frozen the musical, he, during the pandemic, our friend circles kind of always circled each other. Mm-hmm. And so I knew who he was, and I was actually a fan of his from the show Bonding. If you ever watched Bonding.
Oh, I loved Bonding.
I remember my best friend Nick, we used to live together, and hi Nick Laughlin, and he we watched that show, and I remember rewinding one of Matt's scenes, and I was like, that was so good, we have to watch that again, this guy's so good. And so then, I don't know, cut to a few years later, it's during the pandemic, there's a huge snowstorm in New York City. Matt was living in Maine at the time, but I think he was in Miami actually at that moment. But he sent me, this is so embarrassing for him, he sent me it was Elsa from Frozen, and it was something like, let it go. I don't know, it was some Frozen meme that he sent me that was like supposed to be funny during a snowstorm. And he was like, you were the first person I thought of. And I was like, first of all, this is so hot. Matt Wilkes just DM'd me. Okay, like, where is this going? And then second of all, and I turned to Nick. I was like, oh my God, Matt Wilkes just DM'd me. But it's a Frozen meme. That is so lame. So that was his entrance line. And then we just started chatting for on Instagram in the gay way that gays do. And then when he got back to New York, we had five different plans to hang out. We were going to go to dinner, blah, 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 whatever we were going to do. And he bailed on me all five times. He was sick. He had to make a self tape. I don't know. He had all these excuses every time. And I kept saying yes. Isn't that so crazy?
Well, it's not crazy when you have a crush and he also looks the way he looks. And
I know.
Listen, I have been with my goddamn husband for 11 years, and I did not go out with him for, you know, like a full week after we were supposed to, just because like life came up and whatever. Like sometimes the beginnings of the romance have a few twists and turns, but you eventually had your first date. And please tell me you had a very delicious first kiss, at least.
It was like fine. We had a really nice meal. Our friend Josh was the manager of Tiger. We went to the restaurant Tiger downtown. Shout out to Tiger. The place is so good. I think it's still there. And it was like a fine meal. I'm more outgoing than Matt is. So I felt like I was kind of talking for a lot of it. And I was like, and then after, I was like, okay, so do you want to like go to your apartment now? Because we were pretty close to his apartment. And he was like, I actually have to go make a self-tape. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Who is this guy?
These fucking and we, like, self-tapes. Kind of, Jesus.
So actors are so fucking annoying. And he, and I think we like, I guess we kissed. I don't remember. He's a good kisser, so I don't know. It must have been good enough. But then actually what happened was then we went on another date, and we went to the Rosemont in where's the Rosemont, like Williamsburg?
Yeah.
And he was like, he shows up to the bar and we ordered a drink. We're sitting in the backyard at the Rosemont. And he was like, I'm really hungry. Do you mind if I order some food? And I was like, sure. I don't know. I just thought that was like such a weird. So he orders pad thai to the backyard of the Rosemont and sits there and eats pad thai in front of me. And I was like, this guy is a fucking nut job. And then I don't know. It was just sort of what. And then what actually happened was a couple weeks later, we both happened to be out on Fire Island, and there was this huge monsoon rainstorm on Memorial Day weekend, and I quite literally got trapped. I was staying in Cherry Grove. He was in the Pines, and I got trapped at our friend Victor's house with Matt, and we literally, because I was not about to walk back through the meat rack in a monsoon, and I don't know, that was kind of the end of, that was sort of the end and also the beginning of all of it, and now we live together, and we just got a tattoo together. Oh my god.
On your forehead?
So we're like those. How's it healing? It's so like, I don't know, we're those guys.
Well, John, you can't just mention the tattoo will you say where it is on your body?
It's on my, I would show it to you, but it literally, I just got it 2 days ago and it still has that thing over it. So it looks kind of funky. I get to take it off today, but it's a lobster claw. And I got mine in blue ink because blue lobsters are 1 in 2 million. There's a bunch of other stuff to it too, but yeah, we got tattoos this week. Matt has tattoos with all of his best friends and maybe some of his ex-boyfriends and et cetera. And so I was like, I feel like have I earned a spot on your body?
I love the trail of tattoos littered across Matt's body, full of friends and exes, and maybe there's even a tattoo of the pad thai he had at the Rosemont. And you know what? Sometimes we need to commemorate our memories, John.
Honestly, that would be a good tattoo. It's kind of gross, but like maybe we should.
I love your love story. I just think it's also so fun to, you know, talk to someone who is also dating an actor that I really respect. I respect your career. I think Matt, his career is so cool, just to go from
gay.
Bonding gay was an amazing show. Did I audition for it? Sure. Is that not a part of the important part of the story? It's not. But I think that it's so cool to see two people who have made it work, especially in working in the entertainment industry, which is, you know, a dumpster fire. It can be a really terrible thing, but like you have clearly made it work despite the what? Say with me, self-tapes. Now,
oh my God.
John, I need to ask you the next podcast question, which is, if the world was ending, you could only save one character actress, who would you save?
Okay, this is kind of niche, I think, but the girls that know will know, but Mary Louise Burke. And do you know who Mary Louise Burke is?
I know Mary Louise Burke, but I had to recalibrate because I thought you were going to go Mary Louise Parker. Give me your entree to Mary Louise Burke. Why is she yours that you're saving?
I saw her in this play, and I can't even remember what the play was, but it was with her and Holland Taylor. And my friend Greg Hildreth used to talk about Mary Louise Burke, and he does an incredible Mary Louise Burke impression. But she did this play. I can't remember what the play was called, but I fell in love with this woman, and I think she should be in everything, and I don't know why she's not in everything. But she is just this like teeny little woman, and it's like the most beautiful thing you've ever seen. I don't know how to describe her.
Hold her. Oh, of course. And the name of the play that you saw with her was called Ripcord with Holland Taylor and Mary Louise.
It was called Ripcord with Holland Taylor. And we went backstage afterwards and sat in the dressing room with her and Holland Taylor. And I don't know. I just like, I, I just fell in love with her, and I want to be in a show with Mary Louise Burke. And I
you will also. She was Jack's mother in Into the Woods in 2002,
exactly.
Which is huge. The first boy ever like had like a rough and tumble makeout with was while Into the DVD of Into the Woods played in the background. So shout out to Tom, but
so hot.
You don't even know.
Has that ever, John. that has happened before. If you ever have like something playing on shuffle and something really embarrassing, like a show tune comes on while you're hooking up with somebody, nothing is truly more embarrassing, especially if they're not a theater person.
Oh, you need to know that. I just talked about this on the Patreon for our horny gay ass sex series where Sal, who's a very fucking hot, he's very hot. And he talked about how he was in the middle of a sesh. He was fucking someone, and then like his like Pokemon soundtrack came over his shuffle while he was fully inside of someone. And listen, sometimes the shuffle is a bit of a saboteur, and it just colors the experience, and that's okay. Into the Woods was playing while I was like, you know, playing lightsabers with my freshman crush.
My Spotify, nobody's Spotify Wrapped is more embarrassing than mine. I promise you.
Are you someone who...
I don't listen to show tunes actively, but I have done a couple shows in the last couple years that require learning music from shows that already exist. And so, like, it's really embarrassing.
Is it really the year in the life with Frog and Toad?
Oh, God. I sang a song for my audition for Cincinnati from a year with the life of whatever it's even called.
What song?
It was a song called I'm Coming Out of My Shell.
Of course.
I'm Coming Out of My Shell.
I'm coming out. Wait.
It worked.
Is it the snail with the nail?
I guess.
Is it the snail with the nail that sings that?
I don't even know the show, but somebody sang it. This is right when YouTube, like musical theater on YouTube came out. And I want to say it was Andrew Keenan Bolger sang this, and it was on YouTube, and I was like, what is this great song? And I sang it for my college auditions. And I guess,
holy,
I don't know.
Listen, sometimes we need to shout out the show tunes that we listen to by force or otherwise. Now, because we sadly have to get to the end of this interview, I want to ask, what are you manifesting for either a delicious gay moment, whether it's you wearing a Speedo at the Chase Park Plaza in St. Louis, or what do you want to manifest for an upcoming gay memory that will make you feel like you're living your gay bliss?
I went to World Pride in Madrid last year. And that was like a lot. It was a lot. It was incredible. But that was like a gay fantasia.
I talked to your boyfriend's ex on this podcast about Spain.
I saw that. We were there together. We stayed in a house together. Hi, guys. I love you.
I love that you can say that. You can say, I love my boyfriend's ex. Come on, gay people. Come on, evolved, emotionally intelligent people. Come on.
It's not that hard. You just have to communicate with each other. It's like not that deep. And plus, if they were with each other, chances are, and I love this person, chances are there's like, there's something that connected the two of you. So like, I don't know. And there is like, I don't know. You just have to talk to each other. Anyway, I don't know. I think I'm manifesting, to answer your question, I think there's some good theater happening right now. I'm like, oh, we're so show queeny today, but it's a gay podcast. There's some theater that has been making me excited lately, and I'm manifesting more of that because I've also seen some not great stuff, but or stuff that wasn't for me, but I'm manifesting more cool theater. There's like, I don't know, keep making cool shit, people.
Yeah. Well, next week I'm going to be in New York, and I'm going to be seeing a bunch of that cool shit, and I'm going to be doing a little recap on this podcast. I'm seeing Death Becomes Her, Gypsy, Sunset Boulevard, going back to Oh Mary, seeing Cult of Love. So, John, I'm also manifesting that they continue to make great theater, and yes, you yourself will continue to be in cool theater, and I am so excited to continue to support the very handsome, the very talented John Riddle. John, thank you for coming on That's a Gay Ass Podcast.
You're so sweet.
Will you please tell the listeners where to follow you?
You can follow me. I'm like a bit geriatric and I'm only on Instagram and it's like sometimes, but you can follow me at the John Riddle. I messaged at John Riddle and asked him if I could have his handle like 7 years ago and he said no. So I'm the John Riddle. It's not the sounds so pretentious.
The John Riddle there. And we're gonna say fuck you at John Riddle. We have linked it in the description.
I'm sure he's a great
and
guy.
John, thank you for being so honest, so funny, and I will see you on the Great White Way.
I'll see you there, sweetie.
Thanks for listening to That's a Gay Ass Podcast with John Riddle. If you enjoyed his episode, please tag us on Instagram. And if you would like that horny bonus episode with Manuel Betancourt talking about his thruple, talking about shower sex, talking about what it's like to sleep in a California king with two grown ass men, that is at patreon.com/gayasspodcast. And just to say it one more time, sending so much love and many prayers of safety to everybody in Los Angeles. It is truly unimaginable, and I am very grateful to all of the people who have checked in and to all of the people who are on the ground trying to save the world from literally burning. I love you all so much. Please, please, please stay safe. And of course, as well, stay gay. I love you.
Bye.
You've been listening to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, hosted by me, Eric Williams. If you want to see and hear more, make sure you're subscribed to us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Spotify, Apple Music, or Patreon at Gay Ass Podcast. That's a Gay Ass Podcast is executive produced by Eric Williams and produced by Nathaniel McClure. We'll see you next week.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.